Nutty Debate.
Hello, nutcases and mixed nuts. Welcome to the first Nutty Debate of 2012. And today we're going to be discussing, what fantastical world would you like to live in? Yes, well, you know, this normal world can sometimes be humdrum and dry, but rather than live here, let's go on to Narnia or Hogwarts or wherever you want to go. Tell me, where would you like to live? And on the call with me today, I have...
Nobilis Reed from NobilisErotica.com.
Michael Corley, for also known as Michael Vox, from VoxBoxComics.com.
Chris Morse, also known as Professor Brain Fever and Company at Supervillain Corner.
And Julian DeCorin from Chemically Inspired.
First of all, I would like to get one thing out of the way. Westeros, which is the world in which the Game of Thrones series is set,
totally stole that from me.
Is a wonderful place to visit in our imaginations. I don't want to live there.
We would die.
Everybody suffers.
Yes. And if you don't die, you're blind, maimed, raped, tortured, you name it. But the food is amazing.
Now, can I ask a question first before we even go even further? I'm going to derail it real quick.
Go right ahead.
When we're saying we would like to live in these other universes, these other worlds, are we saying we as ourselves would be picked up bodily from Earth and plopped there? Or if we go there, for example, if I chose Middle Earth, I don't think I will, but if I chose Middle Earth, does that mean I can go and be a hobbit? Or am I me, Chris the human, in Middle Earth?
Yeah, I think you could be Chris the hobbit.
Okay.
But you can't be Frodo.
No, obviously not Frodo.
That
yes.
changes the calculation a good deal, because if you're talking about Hogwarts, I originally eliminated the world of Harry Potter because I don't do magic, so therefore I would not be allowed to be a part of any of the cool parts of that. My life would be completely unchanged.
See, but I think you would be a magical user if you were in a world with magic.
But
I think people who are creative or scientific were easy wizards.
Right, but the thing is that because of the way Harry Potter works, we could be in it now and not know. That's part of the whole theme of this, is that it's a secret world that exists outside of our own. Now, if you're saying I could be plopped into it and be a wizard, well, that's a different thing than just saying, okay, now you live in that world. But then so that kind of violates that rule of being, you know, just you in that world. So I originally had eliminated Harry Potter for that reason, because it's like, okay, I could already live in it and not know. If I was me in that world, since I don't do magic, I would live in it and not know. there's no point. I picked things where me as I am in every circumstance, you know, the job I do, my family, my living situation, et cetera, pick that up. Where would I find advantages to living in these other times and places? And so that really colored my choices a great deal.
Well, I think that it's kind of like anything that you would logically think that skills you would logically have. For instance, if I were put into the Harry Potter world, logically, I don't think I would be a wizard. While I am pretty creative, I just don't think that I would be a wizard. I think I would be a muggle through and through. And so I wouldn't choose that. If I were picked up and plopped into Westeros, I mean, I wouldn't have a graphic arts job now, would I?
No.
But I would have to see that my choices would be rather limited. And for me, I'm always bringing it back to when people talk about what time in history would you like to live in. I'd not like to live in any time in history. Because I'm practically blind. And that puts me at a great disadvantage. So with Westeros, I would be a nearsighted peasant, small folk.
No. You would be Nutty the baby left on the hillside to die.
Exactly.
Quite possibly. Look, like the look of her eyes. Let's just leave her out to die.
My eyes are very pretty. They just don't work.
you depending on how bad your eyesight is, you might have ended up as a calligrapher or limner.
That's true.
Nearsightedness actually... one of the things that it gives you is a great deal of acuity for certain kinds of nearsightedness when you're up close.
So I could have just been a scribe at Old Town.
Possibly.
Rather than being raised as a baby because Nymeria found me on the hillside.
See, I'd be in the same boat you are in. I'm nearsighted too and all that other good stuff.
Ah, you're nearsighted enough This is nothing. I've tried on your glasses.
I know. I've got horrible eyesight. My trainer tries on my glasses all the time, and he just cringes. He's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I stared.
I tried on your glasses, and I was like, uh-huh, and? You call this a bad prescription? Really?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a logical progression.
Okay, so that does color the things a little bit, but I'm going to stick by what I originally chose because I think, even under those circumstances, I still think my choices are better.
And what is your actual choice?
The first thing I thought of, actually, and it possibly has to do with my choices about where I'm spending my time these days, was Eberron, which is the world where the most recent universe that Wizards of the Coast has produced for Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. I live a little bit in there myself.
I play DDO, which is their online game, which is also set in Eberron.
Me too. Kaneth?
I'm on the Kyber server.
Ah.
You know, I've played in that a lot. I've seen, you know, one of the things that they've done there is kind of said, okay, what would happen if there was an industrial revolution in a fantasy world? And so you have magical factories and, you know, basically androids. The Warforged are artificial people. They have a lot of the things that all of the conveniences that we would expect in our world. They have railroads. They have, you know, intercity communication. They have a lot of what would amount to modern society in a world with elves and magic and dragons. I think that was my first choice when I was thinking about it.
Good choice.
And then I thought, well, you know, if you're going to go that direction. Now, the thing about Eberron is that while it has a lot of those conveniences, it still has a lot of the chaos of those kinds of adventuring worlds. You know there's political chaos and all that kind of stuff, which makes for great stories. But to some extent, I think it's a little dangerous to live in.
Just a touch. But the cool thing is, if you die, you can be resurrected there.
That is true.
It comes in handy.
And so that was like, you know, for like the first 6 hours or so after I got, you know, worked on this, that was my first choice. But then I realized, you know what? There's another universe where not only do I like to visit there, but I also like to visit my imagination, and that's the world of Chris Lester's Metamore City.
Oh yeah, I knew you were going to mention that.
Now what's that?
Okay. Metamore City is actually another kind of D&D derived world to some extent, though in his case the serial numbers are filed off.
I was brought to Metamore by Steve Ely when he found out that I love Shadowrun, and he's like, if you love Shadowrun, you have to listen to Metamore, which is basically you've got magic in modern day.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, there's been a synergistic kind of relationship between magic and technology.
Yes.
And so it's even further advanced than we are. Socially speaking, it's fairly similar to what we are. Perhaps more like Toronto than New York City, but it's a fantasy world that's been advanced, you know, through an information age. See, Eberron is kind of industrial age. Metamore City is definitely information age. I mean, you know, computers,
yes,
internet, all that kind of stuff exists there, which I find, you know, very personally fulfilling. My job would not really exist in Eberron, my day job, but it would exist in Metamore City. So I would be able to use most of the skills that I have there and also be able to participate in that kind of magical world.
You'd be friends with Artax, wouldn't you?
No, Artax is a pretty dangerous character. I mean, if you look at how he was originally written, a visit to Spells R Us is a dangerous proposition. You don't know how you're going to come back, especially if you're male.
like that one story.
Yes. So, you always read the instructions on his stuff really carefully. It's funny. I mean, every time I've written about Artax in my stories, my main characters have always said, oh no, I'm not going there. I've heard the stories.
For everyone not familiar with Metamore City, you need to look it up. It's a podcast. There's a bunch of stories already finished, quite a few written by Nobilis here, and he's also selling a collection of them as an ebook as well.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. His stories for Metamore are definitely more on the steamy side of things.
Well, that's what I write.
But I can vouch for them because as a person who's not into erotica, I love those stories.
Oh, thank you. So, that is high praise.
I do listen to and read your stuff quite a bit, but not all of it. It's I pick and I choose.
I think that's a prudent thing to do with pretty much everyone. But in any case, that's what I like about Metamore City is that there would be less disruption. Transplanting me into that would involve less disruption in the things that I like about my life. And plenty of disruption for the things that I don't like about my life. I mean, to some extent, I think Metamore City was originally created as a somewhat utopian situation in some extents. I mean, there's not a great deal of war in his universe. There's not a great deal
Not on the grand scale. There's a lot of private wars.
Yeah, there's a lot of that stuff, but everybody seems to make a lot of effort not to have those things break out into everyday life.
Right.
I mean, everybody tries to keep them as secret as possible. There's not a great deal of the thing is that there's plenty of poverty there. I mean, you've got that whole street level culture going on. And whenever you've got people living at that level, there's usually something that's kind of holding them there. So I think that there's a certain amount of dark side to Chris's universe that we haven't necessarily really looked into yet. I mean, why don't they have things like, I don't know, universal healthcare, universal education?
Yeah.
The things that we kind of would expect as part of a utopia aren't there. But at the same time, it looks like, at least for most ordinary people, there seems to be more of a strong middle class there than our current world is going for. So economically, technologically, I think that would be the most comfortable for me to live. And, you know, I'm almost 50 years old. I'm much more interested in comfort than adventure.
If you want comfort, though, I might have you beat. Because you said, what fantastical world? And that could lead someone to think, well, fantasy world. Although that's not necessarily the case, because there are plenty of fantastical worlds that are more science fiction than fantasy. So, Nobilis, if you want comfort, it's very hard to do worse, or to do better, rather, than the Star Trek universe. Particularly
that's
true. The Star Trek of the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Now there is war, there is danger, but I would love an apartment that I didn't really have to pay for, with a replicator that will get me any kind of food I want. I can go down the street and jump into a holodeck and live any kind of fantasy world that I want. That if you want comfort, I present to you the Star Trek universe, my friend.
That is true. That is quite true.
It is a place where a writer doesn't actually have to have a real job to be able to just sit there and be a writer. Look at James Sisko. He has his own quarters on Deep Space Nine, and he's a freelance journalist.
Mm-hmm.
How awesome is that?
And then if you do want to have a life of adventure, the frontier is out there.
Yes.
It's still out there.
Yes.
And you can pick up and leave Earth and go off find a place where you can contribute to building something. Because one of the problems with Earth in Star Trek is that there's nothing left to build.
Mm. Yeah.
Everything is perfect, and that's fine. And like you said, for comfort, if you want to live on Earth in Star Trek, you're golden. Mm. And then if you get tired of that, if you say, you know what, I want to contribute to something, I want to make something new, then the frontier is out there. There's always new planets being colonized, experiments in various social organizations and things like that.
Wormholes to get you to the Gamma Quadrant so you can fight a bunch of shapeshifters. Yeah.
Yes. Right. I mean,
the
option exists to join a big organization like Starfleet and have those kinds of things happening out there, or to scrape together enough whatever resources you need to, and the like-minded people to go off and found a colony of 100 people out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, the
The great thing I loved about The Next Generation, I mean, I love the show, but I am primarily, I mean, I do online stuff, but I'm sort of still primarily a stage actor. And like they would have episodes of The Next Generation where they would have, you know, the officers would be on stage performing for the crew.
Yes.
You know, they're still doing Shakespeare. They're doing Cyrano de Bergerac. And then you have in Voyager, which is a god-awful show, but they had... but you had the Doctor who became a holo author. And so us podcast people, instead of doing podcasts, would be doing holo performances or holo shows. And they just you send them out into the universe and you become, you know, you can still do, I could still be me in that universe. I wouldn't have to necessarily become some other, like I wouldn't be Chris the Hobbit like in Middle Earth. I wouldn't have to be Chris the android or Chris the Klingon. I could still be Chris the human who enjoys writing and acting and still live in that universe and not necessarily, you know, I could be on a ship, I could be on Earth, I could, you know, I could do anything. And I just love that. It's a little bit of a boring universe in that fact of if you're not on a ship, if you don't have a card.
But only if you want it to be.
True, exactly.
The option, I mean, even if, first of all, I mean, one of the things my wife likes to comment privately to me when we're at a con is that, have you ever noticed that the people walking around in Starfleet uniforms could never make the physical requirements if they were actually... but the thing is that I would imagine that in Star Trek, you know, achieving that level of fitness is probably a lot easier.
Well, it's nice when the hot fudge sundaes are healthy.
Yes.
I mean, yes. Deanna Troi, how many hot fudge sundaes does she have? She actually says in one episode that it's not actually bad for her because it's just a regular diet in the taste and form of a hot fudge sundae.
Right. They also don't have all those preservatives that we have in our food. So, right, you know, you could go and eat a cheeseburger. So you'd eat cheeseburgers every day and not gain a freaking pound.
It's interesting that you brought this up so quickly because Tech was not able to join us on this call. He's not feeling very well. But he knew exactly what his fantastical world would be. He's going to own a hotel on Ryza. Which is wonderful.
Oh, Ryza.
Because his main... character from our Star Trek role-playing game. The backstory is he's a Federation officer, but the backstory is that he grew up on Ryza and his dad owns the Delure Inn on Ryza. So it was very easy for him to pick that. As much as I love Star Trek and I'm a huge, huge Trekkie, and the idea of one of the cool things about Star Trek is, especially on Earth, they seem to celebrate older things having to do with culture, things having to do with art and creativity. If you are an artist, you're celebrated and you're kind of given a place of position. It's not about what you produce, it's about what you might produce. And so while that would be great, I don't know, I always have a distaste for Federation.
You Ferengi.
No. I'm a Klingon.
Oh, in that case.
Nukes is a Klingon name. And while I love the idea of headbutting people as a greeting, and I have done that on occasion, it would get a little tiresome. but there are so many other worlds that are just fascinating to me. I can tell you right now, though, I do not think I would want to live in the Star Wars universe.
Well, we talked about this a little bit, that the Star Wars and Star Trek are inversely proportional in safety.
Exactly.
There is no OSHA in the Star Wars universe.
Even if you are a Jedi, you could get slaughtered. Ooh, sorry. That was my hand flying in a big gesture, and I just hit one of my robo grips, and wow. Anyway.
You know, when you're the emperor and your throne is literally like 20 feet from the reactor core.
Who designs these things?
This is not a safety.
Their architects suck.
Well, he had a throne room like every 5 feet in that thing. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. There was one next to the Starbucks.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday throne room.
That's what he was thinking when he went down. I had to go with this one today.
It's Thursday. Why are you in the Sunday throne room?
See, I think it'd be all right, you know, especially if you go the route of the Jedi, because
and then you get slaughtered because one Jedi happens to have more midichlorians than you, even if you're 3 years old.
See, though, no. I would love to visit the Star Wars universe, and what I would do, it'd be very simple. I would get myself a lightsaber, I would go to Naboo, and I would slaughter every Gungan I found.
Oh, because of Jar Jar.
I love Jar Jar. I'm sorry. I'm a Jar Jar fan.
Oh no.
Oh, no. For some reason, we're disconnecting.
No, I don't know. I think it's the whole peacefulness of what a Jedi is that attracts me. It's not the mind control. It's not all that stuff. It's just how their inner turmoil, unless you're Anakin, you know, is so mellow in dealing with the life stresses that, you know, everyone deals with today. I think it'd be, you know, a pretty nice situation to be a Jedi.
You know what? They claim that they're about peace, but every Jedi I know does nothing but fight. They're violent. Okay? There's a lot of, you know, oh, we're on the light side, so it's okay that we cut people down with our lightsabers. It's the bad side is when your lightsaber goes red, and well, that's bad because you've got cookies.
Now, remember, boys and girls, it's against the rules for a Jedi to fall in love. However, yeah. Leading an army of soulless clones that are disposable, perfectly fine.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. It's like, oh, killing is bad. But see, these are clones, so they don't have souls, so we're allowed to kill them. Except for the fact that we've discovered, thanks to Clone Wars, that every one of those clones has their own individual personality. So I would say they definitely have a soul and are worthwhile. Shoutouts to Captain Rex!
It gets into an even more gray area if you're talking about falling in love, because the entire way that the Jedi line is passed along is parent to child. So are they just having soulless relationships? How does that work to keep the Jedis going if they don't fall in love?
I think it's more of a deeper affection than the whole emotion of love. I think it's that, you know, maybe that attachment that people get, because you can't. You can be attached to somebody and not be completely in love with them. It's been known to happen.
You can also be in love with someone and not be, you know, be attached. I think
exactly.
See, I think what what you see in the philosophy of the Jedi Council in Star Wars is actually a perversion of a previous philosophy that was perhaps a little more rational. Keep in mind that you know the Jedi Council that you see in A New Hope, etc., have been there for a long time, and it's been, you know, this philosophy has been in place for a long time, and you know, philosophies that are in place for a long time tend to lose sight of their original guiding principles. What the Jedi worry about is attachment in a very kind of Eastern mysticism sort of way, where you are investing your happiness and your contentment in something external. One can be completely content within oneself and still be in love and not attached. The worry is that loss creates the kinds of emotions that lead to the dark side. And I believe that someone who is a Jedi and who is at risk of this dark side, you know, these dark emotions, could be in love with someone as long as that relationship was founded on the idea that it could end at any time, and both parties would be okay with that because they understand that the relationship is to be enjoyed for its moment rather than have all this future invested in it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
So basically what you're saying is the Jedis are alcoholics. and love is the drink. And while some Jedis could enjoy a drink from time to time and be totally fine with that, it's the ones that have the full disease of alcoholism that the drink will overtake their spirituality, right. And it will be love, Jedi, everything else, rather than Jedi, love, everything else.
Yes. My wife writes Star Trek fanfic. She's quite good at it, if I might say, but I'm biased. And she deals with, you know, she started off this series as an experiment in Mary Sue. I mean, quite frankly, she was asked to write the first story in this series as a Mary Sue, and she put herself in it and made Qui-Gon Jinn her love interest. And but at the same time, stayed true to the character of Qui-Gon Jinn, stayed true to the universe as much as she could. And so she kind of gave me a different perspective on that whole situation. Quite frankly, you can have an attachment to someone without being in love with them. You can have an attachment. I mean, for example, one of the things that is very hypocritical about the Star Trek, Star Wars universe, in the Jedi in particular, are that they create these master apprentice bonds, which quite frankly could be even more attachment creating than a romantic relationship.
I was going to totally bring that up.
You know, look at Obi-Wan's reaction to Qui-Gon's death.
Yeah, no? He had a pretty powerful one.
Hey, you just look. I mean, in the second movie, which I actually just watched today, embarrassingly, again, not for the first time, Anakin doesn't see his mom. Like, he sees her for after 10 years. He goes back home and, you know, finds her right before she dies, obviously. But he doesn't see her for 10 years. And you got the indication in his relationship with Obi-Wan and his relationship to being a Padawan learner that there was no inclination, there was no intention for him to go back to see her anytime soon. And so if you have a young Obi-Wan who we know really nothing about his parents and where they happen to be, there's no indication during the training you're ever going to see your family or the family that you grew up with, if you even had one. And of course, the bond you form with the person who's training you to be a space wizard, you're going to have very, very strong bonds with that person.
They become your surrogate parents.
Exactly. How do you not see that happening?
Well, I definitely saw a strong bond between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. And there was a bit of resentment on Obi-Wan's part when Qui-Gon wanted to take on Anakin. And he was like, what do you mean you're done with me? No, you're not. I'm still a Padawan. No, you're not a Padawan. You're ready to move on. And then Obi-Wan had that same relationship with Anakin.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. one could even go so far as to say that a good portion of Anakin's fall to the dark side.
Oh, it's totally Obi-Wan's fault.
Had more to do with his relationship with Obi-Wan than it had to do with his relationship with Padme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, as you pointed out quite correctly earlier, his reaction when Qui-Gon was killed is what led him to, against the wishes of the Council, to train Anakin.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I think that one could trace that the origin of Anakin's fall to an improper attachment of Obi-Wan towards Qui-Gon.
I've had this conversation before, and I totally believe that Anakin's fall is all Obi-Wan's fault. And a lot of problems with Luke is also Obi-Wan's fault, because the dude just doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
he blatantly lied to him. Yeah. Of course it's his, you know, I mean, they had issues too. They had father, I mean, Luke, poor Luke has so many father issues first, obviously. Yeah. I mean, the obvious one, but also just with, well, even with Yoda. I mean, with in Jedi, In Return of the Jedi, he's visiting Yoda before he dies. Yoda's also been somewhat of a surrogate father, even though he carried him on a papoose. But he's sort of a surrogate father. And he goes, he turns to Yoda and he goes, Yoda's preparing to die. He's never going to talk to Yoda again. And he goes, is Vader my father? And Yoda's like, okay, I'm just going to go to sleep now. No, don't want to talk about it. Don't want to talk about it. I'm like, you...
Friendly buzzer.
Luke has just no decent parents at all in the series. Yeah.
And Obi-Wan was just trying to make Luke Anakin anyway. He wasn't connecting to Luke as Luke. He was trying to recreate Anakin where he failed in the first place.
He's trying to make up for his failure by succeeding.
Yeah.
I'll get it right this time.
I think it's more. See, I guess I'm gonna go Team Obi here for a minute.
That's just because you like Ewan McGregor.
I would like to point out that we are digressing a bit from the topic.
That's okay.
But no, if I'm going to go Team Obi here, you got to think about it. First off, he probably lost the only person he ever probably, you know, really cared about in Qui-Gon. And then he gets given Anakin, and let's face it, he doesn't know what he's doing.
He wasn't given Anakin.
Well, he technically was, if Qui-Gon asked him to watch over him.
Yeah, but he still had to fight for the right to party. No, to do it.
Qui-Gon asked him to watch over him. Qui-Gon did not tell him to take him as a Padawan.
Yeah. But, you know, I think also he had some sort of, like, mediocre attachment to Padme. And when she died, he took over the attachment to the two kids and did what he thought was best. So, you know, he had all this time between Luke being an infant to Luke being an adult to deal with his inner turmoil. And I think he was just, I guess, regressing more into his loss than coming forward and
exactly, and that just goes with our whole thing about them being alcoholics. The thing is, it's like, dude, you live 5 miles away on the other side of a desert, and you didn't even come by and say hello to the kid. I mean, what the heck? You got to make him think you're this crazy old hermit. You never even checked up on him. I mean, he's going around torturing womp rats. What the heck?
Killing womp rats, number one. He didn't torture, he kills them. But on the plus side, I will give them this credit. It makes Obi-Wan a much more interesting character.
Oh, for sure.
So at the very least, we may hate him as a person, as a character, he's so much more interesting that he's a wrecked father.
Two last things I'm going to say on the Star Wars universe topic sort of thing. Number one, the only redeeming qualities for the prequels, in my opinion, was Qui-Gon, because Liam Neeson is awesome. Two, I don't think that before Luke and Leia that the Jedi's ever understood that the Force was passed down biologically, because they are all monks and supposedly celibate, that they just found them. You know, they would find these Jedi's, and it was a rarity. It's much like the reincarnation idea, you know, with the Dalai Lama, how he's reborn into different people, and you have to go and you have to find the person who his spirit has been reborn into. It's much like that, and it wasn't until Anakin had Luke and Leia that they actually realized, wait a minute, we can breed this? And if you read the books following that, there's actually quite a bit of Jedi breeding.
Hi there, I'm James Williams, inviting you to listen to Lifestyle Jazz. Lifestyle Jazz is a new contemporary, modern, and smooth jazz show on the Lifestyle Pod Network. It's hosted by me, James Williams, and each show you can enjoy a half hour of some of the best jazz around. So let me invite you now to visit us on our website, where you can subscribe to the podcast, look at who we're playing, and listen to a few shows. I look forward to seeing you soon at lifestylejazz.com.
Let's go with Julian. What's your fantastical world?
Well, this is probably one that I'm not sure like if anybody would ever even know what I'm talking about, but it's one I like to spend the majority of my time in, and that's Azeroth, the World of Warcraft world.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. Mostly just because, I mean, it's got everything you want. First off, you've got lush forests, and, you know, you've got jungles, you've got deserts. I mean, you even got, like, Egyptian-themed locations, and you even have snow. Granted, there's, like, a dead things walking around in it, but still.
You know, I've got snow here, and I don't have to deal with dead things crawling around in it.
You're not describing the World of Warcraft. You're just describing the world of Canada.
No, you're not. We don't have dead things
lush
in our
forests,
snow.
That's
true.
And zombies.
Well, yes, we do have zombies.
And I don't know. I think it'd probably be like one of the best worlds to live in. Because, you know, you've got elves, you've got fairies, in like a sense. Dragons, especially. And you always have somebody trying to destroy the world.
And you look so cartoony.
<It's> so cartoony.
I'm sorry, after playing Dungeons & Dragons online, just the visuals between Warcraft and DDO and some of the others, it's like, wow. But, you know, Warcraft works for the majority of MMO players. It has its place. I think it would be much too dangerous for me, and I really don't have the stomach to kill that many boars in real life.
It's not just about killing boars. You have to kill spiders, too. Come on.
I don't kill spiders. I cultivate them.
I smash them.
They eat mosquitoes. Yeah,
it is easy to forget that you'd be, arm deep in the blood of your slaughtered boar as you're skinning it and, you know, putting up its hides to tan.
Yeah, but where else can you go wrong seeing a big blue space goat picking flowers in the forest? I mean, come on. It's hilarious.
I'm not sure I require that. And my problem with Azeroth and my problem with Eberron as well, although except for a few quests, I'm in a household where we're against the slaying of dragons.
Interesting.
Ah, okay. Well, see, it's not, you know, you don't have to slay dragons. You're not required. There's like one quest out of like a bazillion of them that you actually have to kill any dragons, and it's an optional, you know, location anyway. You're more killing your own kind, really.
That actually brings me to one of the suggestions that was brought to me. This is from, I think she announces herself as, is it Laura Scribe? She does the Pendragon variety.
Okay.
Valdemar. V-A-L-D-E-M-A-R. Pretty horses are pretty and the music is bad.
Bucko.
I haven't heard from, I have not read it, so I couldn't comment.
Yeah.
Me either.
Me either.
That's the My Pretty Pony universe.
I think that's where Christiana about Equestria? Would go for.
I'm sorry. My Little Pony, because we totally should live there.
Yes.
Anyone? No?
I prefer the world of Lady Lovelocks. Sorry.
It was also suggested to me by a good friend of mine in real life, but I never actually had to pronounce her Twitter name. Athelflad75. She says that she would like to live in Nutty World, and I live here. So that's nothing new to me.
I've stayed with you for a week. Nutty World is nice to see, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Oh, it's great. And my logic does not match the Earth logic at all.
Are you god of that universe?
Yeah. Nimlas, hello.
Imagine two guys drinking beer at a bar. No, make it a pretend bar. None. Beep.
That's more like it.
See?
Oh my god, look, it's coming back. And they're talking crap. Put all those things together, and you've got a cesspit of audio called Two Schooners. Nothing is sacred, except the beer. TwoScooners.com.
Let's move on to Mike Vox. What do we got?
Well, thank you very much. I went through a few of the obvious ones. I did actually, Julian, consider Azeroth. Because I do deeply love that place. I did also consider the Shire because I so love that. But also, I don't like getting toothaches. And, you know, like things a little more advanced. And so I kind of took a page from Chris and, expanding the definition of a fantasy setting. And I would like to live in the Legion of Superheroes world.
Ah.
And, of course, I would like to be one of the Legion of Superheroes, because it's basically you're a young teenager. It's fun. You're alive. You're going out, riding around in your space cruiser, you know, hanging out with beautiful people and having adventures. I mean, and you know, good healthcare.
I totally thought you wanted to be an X-Man.
Well, no, that was my first choice. But the truth is,
another advantage to that is that nobody dies permanently.
True.
That's true. Very true. Even Professor Xavier once joked that the pearly gates for mutants was a revolving door. That's in canon. Thank you very much.
Well, Joss Whedon did another great one in his Astonishing X-Men run where they're talking with Agent Brand of, I don't know, one of the organizations, S.W.O.R.D., I think, instead of S.H.I.E.L.D., and she's talking with Emma Frost. And they bring up Jean Grey. And Emma Frost goes, Jean Grey died 3 months ago, or however long ago it was. And Brand just looks her straight in the face and goes, yeah, that'll stick.
And according to spoiler, she's about to come back. So
of course!
Of course she is. But it's been a few years, actually. But Nobody stays, of course, she's coming back. She's Jean Grey.
They brought back Johnny Storm. They're going to bring back everybody.
Nobody stays dead except Bucky and Uncle Ben, and now they brought back Bucky. So
the only people who stay dead are Bruce Wayne's parents, and that is it.
True. Uncle Ben, the actor that played him in the recent movies, just recently died too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bummer. Interesting. So, I mean, Uncle Ben really does die. Sorry. Batman doesn't die. Joker doesn't die. But you're right. His parents stay dead. That brings up some other really great worlds. No, I do not want to live in Gotham because I don't want to end up being Joker fodder. As much as it might be kind of nice to slink up next to Harley and hang out, no, I'll end up being Joker fodder.
Yeah.
Come on. The odds are really good that you're going to go into a convenience store and, you know, Two-Face flipped his coin and now he's going to murder everybody inside.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to live in Metropolis, because if there's a safe place in the DC universe, it's kind of Metropolis.
I've been to Metropolis. It ain't that great.
I've been to Metropolis, Illinois, too. Yeah, it's not that great.
It's just, like, directly up north from me. It's been there, done that. I've also been to the home of Popeye.
The Sailor Man?
Yes, Popeye the Sailor Man. I've been to his location. It's just a little bit down south from where I'm from. I'll have to take you there if you come back.
I always wanted to, like, get superpowers whenever I ate spinach as a kid, and it never worked.
Nope. My mom tried playing that trick on me too. She's like, if you eat your spinach, you'll be strong like Popeye. And I just looked at her and went, no,
all it'll do is make you regular.
That was where he got his powers from.
Yes.
I would like to mark this moment as the first time I am not the one to drag the discussion into the gutter.
That's right. It was me. I'm a pretty big fan of steampunk. I'm currently playing a fun tabletop game that a friend created, Victoriana. As much as I love the idea of the steampunk world, I do think I'll end up... Oh, I can't remember if it was... I think it was on Escape Pod. It was on one of these podcasts, a short story about... Basically, it was a workhouse for people that were injured. In industrial accidents in the steampunk world, and basically that opened my eyes to, while steampunk is pretty, with my klutziness, I'm going to be disabled very quickly.
How many people are horribly scalded in a given week from all that steam?
Exactly. Yes.
Well, I mean, if you looked at the actual, you know, what life was like for people in the actual steam age.
Yeah.
Steam power is not fun stuff.
No.
I mean, it's riverboats on the Mississippi used to explode on a regular basis. Boilers, I mean, what you've got is a high pressure system using usually what amounts to iron pipes. I mean, the pipes were generally speaking iron. And iron does not do well under thermal stress where it's getting hot and cooling and et cetera, et cetera. These things fail on a regular basis, and when steam fails, it usually fails in a bad way in some sense.
I'm thinking of one book in particular, but not wanting to spoil anyone on anything. But yeah, basically they blow up the countryside.
Yeah, so steampunk is a nice place to visit. Wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah.
Well, most steampunk. I mean, there are some steampunk worlds that are a lot more fantastical than others. I mean, if you took like Difference Engine, for example, as being one of the seminal works of steampunk, it's not really that much different than actual Victorian London. You know, they've got a few technologies that they didn't have back then, but it hasn't completely transformed. You know, the class system is still there. The dirt, the grime, and all that stuff is still there. They just have a few more toys. and most of the people who are affected by it are fairly well off. But there are other steampunk worlds that are a lot different than the kind of alternate history steampunk that we've seen. There's steampunk the style, and then there's steampunk settings, and I think that the two aren't entirely completely interchangeable. So
there's a couple of different ones that come to my mind, specifically from our community here. You've got the world of Soulless with Gail Carriher, where you've got vampires and werewolves and ghosts and steampunk. And it's very interesting and very different from our world. And then you've got other things where it's flying ships and Fables of the Flying City and things like that. And then you've got the Hidden Corridor, which is futuristic, but essentially steampunk because the world has evolved from that Victorian age. It's not Victorian age. It's just...
I would like to go back and mention Fables of the Flying City.
Yes, go right ahead. I want to go deeper in that as well.
In spite of the fact that the Flying City in the story that we've seen so far is a part of a rather horrific war and undergoes a terrible siege and all of that, I still think the Flying City would be a really cool place to live. just yeah. because it does seem to have a certain... it has the same attention to style and the same attention to expression and that the Jared Axelrod does. And as yes. and I think that would it wouldn't be as comfortable as Metamore City, but I think it would be an excellent place to live for someone like me. Just in the sense of the way that people live there, even if I weren't a terribly, you know, well-off person, I think that aside from the occasional siege by Russian airships, it seems like a rather nice place to live. I think that one's high on my list.
I feel I would love living there as well, but I feel as a clumsy person, I feel that I'd be like, I'm on the flying city.
Yeah, I am a little afraid of heights. Just a scotch.
Well, the thing is, it's big enough that one you can live your entire life without really ever looking over the edge that way.
Yeah. True.
Still, bringing up the flying city just reminds me of one more thing of the whole Metamore thing. Is the levels of that of Metamore City?
That's true. It's if you don't like heights, Metamore City might be a little uncomfortable.
But you get away from the pollution the higher you go.
That's true.
So that's what wealth affords you. If you are rich, you're going to be living in the non-polluted high areas of the city. If you're poor, you're basically going to be able to chew the air and live on the bottom.
Yeah, that is a definite. I mean, that's one thing that that Chris has not kind of utopia'd away is that kind of class stuff. But one could argue that you need to have a certain amount of. Of stratification like that, a certain amount of it, just to have a world where people
give them motivation.
People do think, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And I think that that a world like Star Trek, for example, where you don't have that, where everybody has a nice place to live, everything that they want to eat, every need is instantly fulfillable. I think that you'd have a certain amount of stagnation as a result.
Well, I don't actually believe that everything is clean and pristine as we think it is. It's just that's the view that we're seeing. Essentially, to me, the Star Trek world is a lot like the Firefly world, except not so extreme, whereas the Federation is an alliance world, okay? And everything's clean and everybody has more than what they need. And say the Orion and Rigelian sector is probably more like an independent world. And you probably don't have all the doctors that you need and you might not be getting everything that you need. And as we learned, while in the Federation life, you don't have money and you don't get paid, outside of the Federation, there is still money and latinum. That's and true. People pay for things.
And if you want that life, that life is available to you in Star Trek. Yeah. Yes.
And all you have to do is make up a sub story, and the Federation will take you anyway. but if you are looking for comfort and comfort alone, if you're looking for a nice fantastical world for your retirement, I will point you to the world of WALL-E.
You mean the movie?
Yes, the movie WALL-E.
Yeah. The starship that's flying around with all the fat people. Yeah, that's...
I already look uncomfortably like those people anyway. So...
I can't look at a Slurpee the same way again.
I like their chairs, though. Those mobile chairs that just go everywhere. Cool. That's kind of nice.
I think that's a little too comfortable.
I also want to bring up a couple of other worlds. I want to bring up the world of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Ooh. I think that could be an entirely fun world. It's not too fatal.
Eaten by an interstellar star goat.
Yeah, but if you think about the fact that your world could be blown up and you can hitch a ride with some Vogons... then get ejected and picked up by the Heart of Gold. I mean, your survivability is pretty awesome. Not to mention the fact that the Earth comes back anyway.
But your survivability is only on the same level of how nonplussed and British you are.
very good point.
But what about Zarniwoop?
What your potential is to later play Bilbo Baggins. So,
yes, or Watson, or Dr. Watson.
Or Dr. Watson. That's also nice.
I love him. I think he's a great actor.
I think that the world of Hitchhiker's Guide is a great place for creative people.
Yeah.
Because there are entire art forms that simply don't exist anywhere else.
And again, you can be a writer for some guidebook and spend 10 years stranded on a planet and still get paid.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, and it's not because your half cousin, half brother is the president of the galaxy.
Now, here's the thing. As far as a per word basis, I think that that Ford Prefect has to be the highest paid writer in the history of fiction.
I will agree with you, but it's nonfiction.
Well, no. In all the fictional worlds.
Oh, in the fictional worlds, yes, I will agree with you.
Yes. He's gotten paid more per word. Now, the thing is, I don't understand about journalism. Do they pay you per word that's actually published, or do they pay you per word of the manuscript you submit?
Published.
Okay,
I'm almost certain it's published.
Well, in that case, then you know, I don't care how much of a pittance he actually got paid. He still got paid more per word than any journalist in any fictional world.
Well, if you think about it. It was only one original word. He simply added mostly to the harmless entry.
Oh, that's right. Yes. That's right. It's one word. He got paid.
That ratio goes up.
Yes, the ratio goes up even higher.
It's fantastic. I love it. And I really want to know what... I'm not much of a drinker, but I've got to try a Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster. I mean...
I have seen recipes for what it might be. Personally, my tolerance is not that high.
I've created my own blood wine, my own Klingon blood wine.
Okay, if we're talking about the universe that we need to go for drinks, now this is a different
That's
question.
A whole different debate.
Yes.
This is what I would recommend just because of the way it's described. I don't know if I'd want to live there otherwise, but the Dresdenverse. The universe of the Dresden Files, because there's McAnally's Pub, which is the clued-in place where the clued-in humans and the supernatural humans go, and apparently he has the greatest beer in the world, and I want to taste it. Even if he keeps it piss warm, I will still drink it.
I just want the lemonade.
Oh, yeah, right?
I really like the idea of the Dresden Files world, and you ever have one of those days where technology just doesn't work? And you feel like Harry Dresden?
I would love to be able to have an excuse for days like that.
I know some people that is their life every single day. And every time I hear somebody complain about how technology never works for them, all I can think of is Harry Dresden.
They're a wizard.
They're a wizard, Harry. Sorry.
That's right.
You're the other wizard, Harry.
The other one. The other Harry.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.